From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Wonder how to get ready for the mad stash? How and where to prep and put away all those tender plants to hopefully make it to next year? Or maybe you wonder about what went wrong with your hydrangeas if they didn't bloom as well as you hoped. Well, Ken Drews and I are back to answer these and other urgent garden questions. But first, this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Time for some questions and answers. You ready, Ken?
Margaret, I have a question.
Oh, yeah? Really? What is it?
What is that thing? And, you know, there's a thing in the sky. It's kind of bright. Oh, it's gone.
Oh.
Oh, it's back. Oh, it's gone.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen it for weeks.
No. We've had some weather, I know. And then, of course, other areas of the country even worse. But yeah, I was feeling when, you know, it has been, we've had our first tastes in the Northeast of fall in some recent days. And so I thought it was a good time to sort of talk about bringing things in and getting ready, even if it's not time urgently yet. And we had a question from Amy, who wrote in about her Begonia boliviensis. Do you remember those? Did you have your grandma's?
Oh, yes, I think I've killed two of those.
Excellent. Then we'll be sure to take your expert answers. so it's kind of a tuberous begonia thing. And she wrote in and she said, it's been so wet where she gardens this late season,
oh,
and
goodness.
She's concerned, like, should she sort of get a jump on it and, you know, help it to sort of dry off? And she says she lives in Omaha. She does have a nice, cool, dark basement in Zone 5B, this is. The plant was great over the summer, but it's a wet, late summer so far, so she's thinking, maybe better start soon to get her to dormancy, out of the rain, et cetera. And so she's kind of wondering what's the best protocol for that plant. I haven't overwintered one in a couple of years, but when they first, when Bonfire, that first introduction, mm-hmm. was the hot plant, and maybe 5, 8, 9, 10 years ago, I don't know when it was, I used to do it for a few years. So you have failed or you have done it? Tell the truth.
I love that white one.
Oh.
I guess I failed. I mean, I thought it was there, and I watched it, and I kept it cool and dry. And
But you tried to keep it growing? Okay. Yeah, because what I used to do with it is, and it worked pretty well, first of all, if it's wet outside, and this is true with a lot of things,
I think.
Well,
that's really important.
Don't you think? I mean, things you want to store, you want to dry them down ASAP, right?
Especially this year, it's been so wet. I've moved all the things like that, like the euchomas, the pineapple lilies. They're all under cover, but where they still are getting light for now.
Right, right. So what I do is the same kind of thing. What I would do with that is I used to put it on my back porch and, you know, so that it would start to dry down, but it still, as you said, had light because it still had foliage. And then eventually I just put it in my sort of 40-something degree basement in the dark, dry, pot and all, and I'd remove the foliage as it withered or if it had withered, and that would be it. And the other key thing was, do not water it to wake it up. I waited until I saw these sort of little signs of, you know, almost like eyes, like little eyes starting to swell. Do you know what I mean? Like,
after you brought them out or inside?
Even inside, they would sort of start to wake up. Like you'd see the beginning, and I don't know the reason why, what trigger, if it was a change in temperature even in the cellar or what. But I would wait, or I'd bring them and I'd put them, say, in the garage where once it was in the 40s consistently, but too soon to bring them out, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I'd let the plant tell me it was ready to wake up is, I guess, what I'm saying. The same way we see buds swell on other things, even outdoor plants, right?
I actually bring mine out and wake them up, but I'm in a warmer place than you.
Interesting. Uh-huh.
So I don't see any little pink points.
Yeah.
I just bring them out and start watering them, and they wake up right away. So maybe those points are there just a little bit under the surface or something.
Yeah. So.
And then I repot them like every 3 years. I check them out.
And I guess the reason that I was saying that I let the plant tell me when it's awake, is because if you are in a cold place and it is still short days, it's still dark, yeah, in March, April, if it's waking up and you start watering, if you push it too fast or take it out and it starts to wake up in the weak light of late winter and it's still too cold, do you know what I mean? It stretches, it etiolates,
yeah, it gets leggy.
Nasty. And
pale and
weak.
Floppy and is never any. And then when you take it outside, it burns.
So I really like try to keep it quiet. And if it absolutely positively tells me it's awake no matter what, then I will give it a drink. But I try to wait. So.
Well, what are some other, hate to put you on the spot, what are some other plants like that that you bring in and keep kind of quiet and dormant and then take out again?
Well, it's hard to get to my cellar in the winter. My cellar is like a plant supermarket. lots of stuff is down there. Well, you just said Euchomus. I mean, I have pots cheek to jowl of Euchomus down in the cellar. Is that where you put them?
Yes, and if we were in Zone 7, we could just leave them in the ground because they're close to hardy.
Yeah, for you, not for me. I'm a zone five. So yeah.
No, not for me either. I mean, if I was in zone seven, so yeah. People in zone seven can leave them out. But I love them, and I have so many, and there's more and more on the market all the time, or even at the supermarket.
At the supermarket?
They're great plants. Yeah, I saw them at the supermarket this week.
Oh, okay. So Euchomus, the pineapple lilies, as they're called, because of the sort of shape of the flower head, the inflorescence.
How about
right?
Those nice stinky things?
The nice like stinky things?
Dracunculus and Ceramatum, you know, or used to be Typhonium.
Uh-huh. And, the voodoo lilies.
Yeah. Amorphophallus.
Yes. I have pots and pots and pots of all of those. stinkers.
Do you give them their own room?
No, it's funny you mention that because, and you know, for people who don't know, these are sort of so-called voodoo lilies. A lot of these, they stink when they bloom because their pollinator is someone who likes, like flies or someone who likes the smell of like rotting meat, dead things, right? And some of them, don't they call them like corpse flowers and stuff?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So maybe two winters ago, it's March, I'm upstairs where I work during the day is just above the cellar. And I had this terrible smell and I think something died, you know, like a mouse or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I open the trap door to the basement and I go down the ladder into my crazy primitive basement. And what it is one of those guys had started to bloom and had pushed up. Is that the spathe or the spadix? I'm sorry. I'm so dopey.
Well, post, actually.
Yeah. So it's inflorescence. And it was, the smell was horrifying. So what do you do with that in March in the Northeast?
You take it to the guest room and close the door.
Oh, I guess so. But those are easy to overwinter if anyone likes curiosity items like those.
Well, a lot of people do.
So we're saying that down in the basement we're putting sort of these bulb-like things that can go dormant that are marginally hardy, not hardy. They're not hardy for us, but they're hardy a couple of zones or a zone or two warmer, right?
Yeah, you know, people force tulips and this is so much easier than forcing a tulip.
Yes.
So we just let them sleep and pretty much ignore them and then water them when they show a little bit of growth. And sometimes they flower, as you found out.
Yeah, a little early. Now, when do you, with the Euchomus, with the pineapple lilies, what I found is that after about the second or third year, it seems to some of them seem to multiply in the pot, and the pot's like full, and I get lots of foliage, and I don't get any flowers. Do you repot yours on a certain schedule? Or
yeah, pretty much every third year.
Okay.
Sometimes I put them back into the same pot, or you know, and take some of the offsets and put them in another pot. Well, that is repotting, I guess. But you know,
right.
You can just nice fresh medium, and I do feed them when I remember, which is not very often. Mm-hmm. But I try to remember to feed them.
And so when you repot them in the spring as they're before you go to wake them up, like you kind of clean them off, get them outside.
When I take them out, right?
Okay, because I was disappointed by that, and I asked our friend Adam at Broken Arrow Nursery, and he said that because they're, of course, propagating them, you know, if they see a pot is filled up, they can, you know, divide it up and sell a lot of smaller plants next year. So because they're doing that, they don't seem to miss a year of bloom, whereas like mine were just getting so overcrowded, I think. That was his thinking about it. So so you do it every third when they wake up. And obviously, if it looks really, really, really full, the pot, you'd mm-hmm. probably do it sooner. I should be doing it sooner if it looks full. So what else is in cannas, I throw them in the cellar, but I don't even – not in the pots, just in garbage bags that I leave open.
Oh, and dahlias?
Dahlias, those are a little harder. Cannas are about the easiest thing to overwinter. But dahlias, what do you do with them?
Well, I leave them out until the frost blackens the foliage, and then I dig them up with a fork. And I don't break them up until the spring. I just kind of wrap them in newspaper, a couple of layers of newspaper folded over like I'm wrapping a gift with maybe a piece of tape or something, and then stack them. And the newspaper keeps them from crushing, and put them also in the coolest place in the cellar, which is about 50 degrees. I used to do it in dry leaves, because you don't want them to completely dry. You want them just a little touch moist.
Right.
And you can moisten them, in February, just sprinkle the newspapers or something like that. But I don't really have access to nice oak leaves that are curled and don't tamp down. And just that would be perfect to have a big trash container of oak leaves with your dahlias in it.
Right. I mean, I've heard people say, wood shavings, vermiculite, sand, peat. You mentioned some of it.
Yeah, I know. We try not to use peat. But
no,
yes.
I know. But all those types of things. And about 40 to 50 degrees, I don't grow so many. And the ones I have grown, I haven't, I've sometimes saved them over, but not so much. Aracemas. Don't you have some? Did we mention those?
Well, those are hardy, because you were talking about things that aren't hardy for us. But I have a lot of Aracema, which are jack-in-the-pulpits.
Yeah.
They're two North American species, and some people think there's 250 Asian species, and I probably have about five or six. And I used to plant them in the ground. I still do. And sometimes I would lose them. But I was actually in Vermont, and I saw someone growing them in containers, and I thought, well, that's interesting. And that person was overwintering them in a closet, not even cold, just dry. And I started potting them and overwintering them in the basement, just like we were talking about the Euchomus. And then I bring them out in May and water them, and it's fantastic, and I haven't lost any. And I do repot them about every second or third year.
Well, the reason I ask is because I was so attracted to this, these pots of, at the garden center, of Aracema ringens, which gets to be a big one.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And it has these beautiful glossy leaves. And it's just so, so handsome. And that jack thing is purple and whatever, the jack in the pulpit part. And the person told me that, just be careful, because you said you lost some of them, that the squirrels and stuff love to dig these, even though these are not native plants exactly, that they dig them up. And it's like hide and go seek with these particular Aracema bulbs. So I don't know if they're even bulbs or corms or tubers.
Tubers.
Tubers, yeah. And so that's what I figured had been happening in the past when I tried. So now I'm going to do these in pots. I think I can do them in pots just like what you said, yeah?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so I have them, and they're going to go in the cellar.
They're really big.
Yeah.
I mean, they can become incredibly big. And in a pot, they probably won't. How many do you have? You have more than two?
I have two.
Oh, I was going to say, if you have three, try one outside with, manure and everything.
True. Maybe I'll do that anyway. Yeah, maybe I'll do that anyway. Have you tried anything, did you try any new experiments besides your usual suspects that you overwinter? I mean, I put a lot of things in the garage, which is totally unheated, and I'm in a cold zone, like things that are hardier about hardy, trees and shrubs.
Space,
yeah.
And I've done it in the past with bananas, cutting the bananas back, and I always think, oh, well, that's never going to make it. And I did it with a mucella. I don't know if you know what that is.
Mm-mm.
It's like a dwarf banana. It doesn't have edible fruit. It has a completely different flower structure. And I did that in the fall last year and brought it out in the spring, and it is blooming. It's been blooming since May, end of May. It's still blooming now. It has this amazing yellow flower. And so that's how you do that. And this year I did it with a camellia because I had a camellia that is just too big and it really wasn't looking too good. And I thought, I wonder if I can store that dormant in the dark in the basement.
You are kidding me.
And I did.
And then what? And you just took it out in what, like March or April or something? Or when did you take it out?
Yeah, I would say late April.
And so you checked it just to make sure it didn't dry out completely
right.
In the late winter? Or?
And I said, keep sleeping.
Keep sleeping. Yeah, you read it some
bedtime stories.
Because there's
no room for you upstairs.
Interesting. Okay. Well, and it's this like constant, even if you've been doing it for a long time, it's this constant kind of, and if you've had a lot of plants, I call these investment plants, as do many people, because, you know, frankly, it's economically, there's an incentive to try to figure out the needs of a particular plant because, you know, you might buy a little one of something. Like I bought this thing called shell ginger, variegated shell ginger, Alpinia zarumbet, whatever. It's green and yellow. I show a picture of it with the transcript for everybody so they'll know. And it was like, you know, it was so gorgeous. I had to have it. It kind of looked like a canna, you know, in the pot maybe. But it very showy leaves. But it was like, you know, $29.95, and that was in maybe a 2-gallon, you know what I mean? It was like, it wasn't too big. But it was so attractive, I just had to try it. And so I wasn't going to compost that thing. And now, don't you know, like 3-4 years later, because I figured out what to do with it, it fills a 36-inch bowl, big, low terracotta bowl that I have by my patio. I mean, it fills it. It's massive. It's like a shrub now. And what I figured out is that, you know, I kind of looked up its history. Where did it come from? What did it do? You know, what was the temperature like where it came from? And I found a place that was like a little bit of light and 45 degrees. The shed I have with a skylight, a little bit of heat in there, you know, so it's not freezing. And I every so often go out and give it a little bit of water so it doesn't desiccate. And it was sort of half awake, half asleep all the time. And wow, so now I have this plant that if I could even replace it would cost $200.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, do you trim it back at all or do you have to like clean it up in the
spring?
Yes.
So when it comes out, it's a little ratty. Some of the old foliage is ratty, but there's lots of new excitement coming from the crown down below. And I've seen pictures where it maybe could have this ginger-like flowers, these flowers. So maybe I'll get that eventually. So sometimes you just have to try. I failed with that Rex begonia vine a number of years. And then I found that my mudroom, which is maybe 55 degrees, 50 degrees and bright, it worked in there, the Rex begonia vine. And then you have to cut it back hard. It's hard to cut back like a 6-foot vine in late winter and think, oh, because, you know, you grew it that tall and you loved it.
It is so hard to grow that plant and it's so beautiful. There's no person who can walk by that plant without stopping.
It's fabulous. So now I figured it out. And again, it's like it's this experiment, right? Like you have to experiment and kill it in a few different places in your house or garage or whatever. So so maybe we should just do a couple of quickie questions about other things besides besides where to stash
what. I forgot.
What.
Are we just talking to each other?
Oh, there's nobody here, is there? but, you know, and with the transcript, I'll give people some, you know, how to do the fig and the rosemary and the other ones that a lot of people may have. I'll give the links to all those if people need the protocols for some of those that confound people. But we had, at a recent open day event at my garden, somebody asked me, actually more than one person said, why are your hydrangea paniculatas, the panicle hydrangeas that were blooming, why are they so big? And the answer is not fertilizer. You know what the answer is, right?
Well, it depends on the variety.
Exactly. Because now everyone's seeing all those dwarf ones, right?
Yeah, and people can cut them back. Maybe they're cutting them back too. But it's mostly that there's, I guess, little lamb and limelight's kind of small.
Right.
But tardiva, oh my gosh, stand back.
Right, it can be 15 feet, right? 12
yeah,
to 15
sure.
feet. And straight
10
paniculata.
Feet wide.
And mine is. And So with those hydrangea paniculatas, make sure you really read, even though they all may look kind of small at the time you buy them in the store, read what the eventual size is. So your pruning can make a tart of a 10 feet instead of 12 or 15 feet, but it's not going to make it 3 feet and permanently, and a little lamb isn't going to get to be 15 feet, right?
Probably not, but there are so many new ones, and sometimes you don't really know. You know, you'll read a tag, and these plants are so new, it may not be right, but anyway.
Right.
So you can prune it.
So variety, pruning method, but variety is super important. Another hydrangea question from Inez, Zone 6A, Dutchess County, New York. She says that her endless summer, good name, hydrangeas weren't blooming. Mm-hmm. She also lost 5 buddleias in the garden the same time. But endless summer hydrangeas not blooming. So in the time we have left, what do you think?
Well, endless summer are like macrophylla, like mop top hydrangeas.
The blue guys. Mm-hmm.
But they bloom on old wood and they bloom on new wood. So they bloom twice in the season. And in a very cold winter, after a very cold winter like we had last year, the buds for the spring blooming could be damaged.
Right.
So maybe she asked you before it's blooming, maybe now, the second set, or maybe in August. Well, we had such a cool and long and wet season this year that maybe they're blooming right now and she's hitting herself in the head for asking the question.
Mm.
But I would say the other thing is if they're congested or if it's a little shady,
mm-hmm.
You know, you really have to remove the three-year-old growth after it blooms. Well, you can tell if you look at the plant, the canes or the stems that come up from the ground, if the ones that are pale, tan, and kind of woody and brittle, cut them out.
At the base.
Don't prune the whole thing. If you prune the whole thing with those kinds of hydrangeas, you don't get anything.
Right.
You can't shear it or shape it. You have to thin it. And you remove about one-third of the growth every year. You remove the oldest growth because it won't really bloom again. You want that nice, fresh growth. So there's lots of reasons. Could be too shady. Could be that she pruned it. Could be that it was a very cold winter.
Mm-hmm. And you lost the spring ones, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think about, in the last 2 minutes, what do you think about 5 dead buddleias?
Sounds like the same thing. Sounds like it was kind of a cold winter. And dead?
Well, see,
lost?
Yeah, and what I wonder is, because here where I am, they died of the Buddleia davidii, is that right? They died of the ground, the sort of common-looking butterfly bush. They
right.
would die to the ground. I have to cut them down just as they start to push new growth from the base. I cut them down to, like, you know, a few inches. So they're not really dead, even though the plant above ground looks dead. And so I think a lot of times people don't know that, and they think it's dead.
Oh, you think maybe she dug them out or something?
I don't know. I'm just saying they do look dead, the upper.
Yeah, if you're in a cold climate like you are, they act as if they're herbaceous perennials. They die to the ground, but it
right.
doesn't mean that they're completely dead or gone. They usually do push up new growth.
Right. So I like to take the whole top off, even if it's 6 feet tall, you know, take the whole thing, right? I don't have them anymore, but.
You mean the twiggy dry
exactly,
stuff?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cut it down. Yeah. Are you putting anything on your back porch yet to start to dry it down for storage?
Well, I've put stuff under an overhang.
Okay.
And everything is so wet and the pots are so heavy.
Crazy.
And it's just rained 21 inches in the month of August this year, in 1 month.
In your area of New Jersey? I don't think we got
21.
12 or 15. I don't know how many we got. It's crazy. Wow. Wow. Okay.
At least it wasn't all at once. It just was continuous.
Yeah.
So the pots have never dried out, and that's why I'm looking at the sun right now and thinking, what is that? Will I be able to mow the 12-inch grass?
Well, go get your hand cart and drag some more stuff undercover, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Thanks, Ken.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
And thanks to all of you for listening. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. You can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook or Instagram at awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.